This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Hope you enjoyed this podcast of the Zioli Show. And if you did, please rate it on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. You know what I'm saying? Thanks a lot.
The Rich Zioli Show podcast.
You know, I was thinking about it. The president's there with Kim Jong-un, and he's talking about, hey, the beaches. You got great beaches here. Why not develop the beaches? And everybody gets angry at that, you know, on the left. They say, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. Why would you even imagine that? But you see, that's the enticement, right? That's the idea. That's how a guy like Trump thinks. It's about capitalism and freedom and jobs and economies. It's really what we should be striving for in a place like North Korea and pretty much everywhere where there's a beach. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. The Zioli Show on Twitter at Rich Zioli, Facebook.com/Zioli Show, and 1210WPHD.com/Rich. You know, it was a very historic, obviously, and I think it was a success, too. And I'll tell you why I think it was a success. But first, let me tell you why TheWeek.com thinks it's a success. They are not a pro-Trump site. They're not a pro-Trump publication. I like to go to places that are not particularly friendly to Trump to find out what they think of these things. So their take on this, the president's historic summit, the following they write here. From TheWeek.com, Trump-Kim summit should be hailed as a success. The ink is barely dry on the joint statement signed by President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un during Tuesday's summit in Singapore, and yet people are already dumping on it. This is no deal, the critics say. It's just a vague press release rehashing talking points. But on the whole, the meeting is an auspicious start. A follow-up press conference announced some concrete steps. Quote, number one, the U.S. would halt military exercises in South Korea. Kim apparently agreed not only to the principle of denuclearization, but to some sort of inspection regime. And the president announced a follow-up meeting between Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and a North Korea counterpart. Still, there's no mention of a peace treaty. North Korea and the U.S. are still technically at war, or a deadline, or many other specifics. But there was never any realistic expectation that a single meeting between two men could produce a comprehensive deal. For starters, a comprehensive deal would have to include China, Russia, and South Korea. And of course, there will be details to be ironed out. President Ronald Reagan's historic Reykjavik summit with Mikhail Gorbachev, the obvious template for what Trump is trying to do with Kim, happened in 1986, and the resulting Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty only happened in 1987. The point of such summits is not to come out with a full treaty neatly packaged and tied with a bow. It is to build rapport between leaders, which matters enormously, and get a sense of each other's red lines, which will form the outlines of a future deal. Again, this is TheWeek.com. It's not a pro-Trump site. This isn't Breitbart. In fact, I'd say The Week, if anything, skews to the left. Right now, there is so much more we don't know. The president will say anything. Kim is also a complete mystery. Perhaps being from a different generation and having been exposed to the outside world before joining the family business, Kim has a genuine desire to open up his country, if only because it would make him much richer and enable him to travel a lot more. Or perhaps he's just dangling the possibility of a comprehensive deal in front of an all-too-gullible U.S. president to get short-term relief on aid and trade with no intention of actually denuclearizing, a game that his father was quite adept at. Your guess is as good as mine. Besides, every single international summit ends with the parties pretending it's been a big success, regardless of the actual contents. But with all these caveats duly noted, it certainly seems like the summit goals have been accomplished. Trump and Kim seem to have built real rapport, and the peace process with North Korea seems more alive now than at any point since the 1990s. If Kim's desire to reach a settlement is genuine, and if Trump manages not to screw it up, a good deal could be in sight. I agree, those are very big ifs. Again, remember, this is not a pro-Trump site. I agree, those are very big ifs, but every international negotiation of consequence includes very large ifs, and that was true before Trump. In other words, there's reason to be cautiously optimistic. Given what could be realistically accomplished in one day, it's hard not to think that if anybody other than Trump were president, the summit would immediately have been hailed a preliminary success. Let me stop right there and echo that point. I could not agree with that more. Given what could be realistically accomplished in one day, it's hard not to think that if anybody other than Trump were president, the summit would immediately have been hailed as a preliminary success. I would just take out the word preliminary. Any other president, particularly if it had been Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, it would be a fawning success, an unprecedented success. It would already be the ink dried on the page kind of a success. Remember something. When the false nuclear missile alert went out in Hawaii back in December, or January, I guess it was. It's right after we came home from our family vacation. And my friend out in Maui, I was worried about him. I sent him a text. And I hope you guys are okay. And he writes back a snotty little text about how, thanks, but anybody who supports Trump, I can't take it seriously because you're enabling this guy. And he thinks this is all a game. And it's very real when it's on your front doorstep. Right? So even though it was a false alarm, it was the fault of a dopey bureaucrat in Hawaii. I still don't think we know the whole story there. I think it was covered up. Remember, that guy who hit that nuclear missile alarm, he had a hit confirmed. So it was, do you want to warn the entire state of an incoming intercontinental ballistic missile? Click yes. Are you sure? Click yes again. And he had to do that. But we'll never get to the bottom of that. That's been covered up by the state of Hawaii, a very, very left-leaning state, as you know. But that was Trump's fault that everybody took it seriously. The fact that they believed it to be true, the fact that they hid in their basements and ducked for cover was because of Trump's words and actions and deeds. So why are the same people who criticized him then not today jumping up and down and screaming, this is wonderful, this is fantastic, we're moving forward, we're moving towards something, something phenomenal, something historic. We're moving towards something. You don't go to the gym one day and expect to walk out of there in great shape, right? You don't get on the golf course one time and expect to be able to do whatever it is golfers do. It takes time for these things to occur. It's the same thing with international diplomacy. And yet we've gone from tweets calling him Rocket Man and warning of fire and fury to the president coming out and saying, yeah, you know what? I look the guy in the eye and I trust him. I take him at his word. I think he's legit. I think he really wants to move forward. And the response from the left, particularly elected leaders on the left, is to say, you are propping up a brutal dictator. Oh, come on. Which is it? Which is it now? Should we ignore him? Taunt him or try to make peace in the world with him? What is it? There are going to be three things here. To ignore him is to enable him to continue down his road of isolation and whatever other nonsense he wants to pull. To taunt him is apparently the reason why we were on the precipice of global thermonuclear war. And so to engage with him, I would have thought a couple months ago would be the ideal way we can move towards peace, much like what we did with the Soviet Union in the 1980s. We went from Khrushchev banging his shoe on the table saying, we will bury you, to, well, the fall of the Soviet Union and a very, very historic friendship between Mikhail Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan. In fact, if anybody remembers Ronald Reagan's funeral, I do. I stood in line for a few hours outside. That's not true. I didn't have to wait that long. But I was there when many people had to wait for a live. Well, I worked in D.C., so I didn't have to wait that long. But never. That's for a separate show. But a lot of people waited hours and hours to see the former president lying in state in the U.S. Capitol. And I remember when they cleared the rotunda out and Mikhail Gorbachev came in to pay his respects to former President Reagan. You know, we went from the two nations at the precipice of war, Sting singing about if the Russians love their children too. Do you remember that song? I don't know if you remember that song or not. It was literally Sting, and he quotes that line from Khrushchev. Mr. Khrushchev says, we will bury you. And the whole point of the song is, if the Russians love their children too. There was a movie that came out in the 1980s, only aired one time. Very hard to find. I'm sure now you could find it on Amazon. It was called The Day After. Jason Robards and a number of other very talented actors. I believe the guy from Police Academy was in it as well. Anyway, it was all about how World War III broke out, nuclear war, and then the aftermath of that. It was a very tense time in the 80s. And Reagan went over there, and he didn't go over there. You know, the leadership changed several times in Russia. The first president or the first communist secretary general that the president met with was not the one that he ended up brokering this historic peace with. That was Gorbachev at the end. And that was Gorbachev who moved us towards the fall of the Berlin Wall. And, you know, once you get over the Berlin Wall, there's no going back in. I mean, once you experience freedom and passion and your eyes are open and you're alive, you don't want to go back to that kind of a life. And so they realized that. That ushered in the change, the fall of the wall, that ushered in Boris Yeltsin, that ushered in Russia. Now, we've gone backwards in Russia in many respects, but that's the point, right? It took Reagan until 1987. Now, he was elected in 1980 and reelected in 1984. So here's the president going to North Korea. And again, I guess then in the three choice scenario that I've outlined for you, he could ignore Kim Jong-un, in which case then he'd be accused of allowing this rogue regime to continue with their isolationist wacko ways. He could taunt him in a sense of intimidating him and I guess bullying him, they would say, on Twitter to make him understand that he will be destroyed if he messes with us. Or he could go over there and try to have peace. And because it's Donald Trump, he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Back to this article in theweek.com. Again, not a very pro-Trump site. Not at all a pro-Trump site. Credit needs to be given where it's due. It does seem like it was Trump's contempt for conventional thinking and his deal-making instincts that got us here. The official U.S. policy was to refuse these kinds of meetings unless there were major concessions from the North Koreans, as those would grant North Korea legitimacy. That policy seems to have simply alienated North Korea's leadership. Thinking like a real estate developer, Trump understood that giving Kim a photo op costs him nothing. Besides, such legitimacy matters little for a regime that domestically controls all of its media and can therefore manufacture it at will, and internationally has pretty clearly accepted its rogue status. Simple-mindedness can be destructive, but it can also mean you see the forest for the trees. Trump cut to the heart of the issue at hand. Does Kim want normalization badly enough that he's willing to give up his nukes? It looks like Trump is well on his way to finding out the answer to that question, and whatever the outcome, we should all be grateful for it. Yet the response from the speaker, or the would-be future speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and the response from Chuck Schumer, it's a little bit pathetic how they responded to all of this. We're propping up a ruthless dictator. Pelosi's statement. In the haste to reach an agreement, President Trump elevated North Korea to the level of the United States while preserving the regime status quo. The millions of families currently living in fear of nuclear weapons in the region deserve strong and smart leadership built on diplomacy and engagement with our regional partners and allies. The president's marginalization of the vast expertise of the State Department and his habitual disparaging of her allies, as demonstrated at the G7 forum, hinders a lasting, stable pathway to peace. We are propping up a dictator. Chuck Schumer. Trump has given a brutal and repressive dictatorship legitimacy. It is best not to dive in head first and hope for the best, but rather to work slowly, transparently, and verifiably to build trust and lock in concessions. And by meeting with him, Trump has given a brutal and repressive dictatorship the international legitimacy it has long craved. So if the president were to ignore North Korea, he was damned. If the president were to taunt him on Twitter, it would be his fault if North Korea acted. And if he goes over there to meet with him, it's his fault because now he has given legitimacy to a brutal and repressive dictatorship.
We're back with the Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. We're back with the Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
The truth of the matter is that if this were any other president, the world would be hailing this as a success, an unprecedented success. But it's Donald Trump, and so all bets are off in terms of how everybody reacts. So glad you're here today. What do you think of the historic North Korea-United States summit? 855-839-1210. Pound 1210 in a cell. The media has primed a lot of people to have this reaction, and I will give you this reaction because I heard this reaction today from somebody. Somebody I respect, by the way, but this person said the following to me. They said, well, yes, but isn't it something that we're closer now with North Korea than we are with Canada? I say, wait, what? How is that even remotely possible? How is that even remotely a thought you can fathom? Canada is still there, as annoying as Justin Trudeau and his eyebrow can be. They're still there, and they still are a good friend of ours. We can disagree with them on certain issues. We don't know what all this is going to yield with North Korea, but the door is finally open. We're actually in the process of having a dialogue with him now. But again, the media primed you for this comparison between the two, so that the natural reaction from many people who aren't very in tune to the issues, who haven't read a lot or listened to a lot of diverse opinions, would say that, go, well, he's fighting with Justin Trudeau and he's praising Kim Jong-un. Now, think about that for a second. Isn't that, first of all, wouldn't you want us in a situation where we are having a trade disagreement with Canada and not war with Canada, right? I mean, we're having a trade disagreement with them. We're talking about tariffs, and we're going back and forth with them about tariffs. And the first time, won't be the last time, the United States and Canada disagree on a policy, or the United States and Great Britain disagree on a policy, or the United States and France disagree on a policy. But why does it have to be one or the other, right? Why does it have to be we're praising Kim Jong-un and fighting with Justin Trudeau? Like, how are the two equal is my question. Does he have to call Justin Trudeau and apologize and then get Kim Jong-un in a three-way party line and then hang up on the guy to teach Trudeau, hey, I really like you best? It's silly. It's beyond silly. But that's where we are in terms of we've got to make everything simple for people to understand. So at the base, the baseline is, yeah, fighting with Canada and kissing up to a brutal dictator like Kim Jong-un. Now, I'll play you a bunch of audio, but here's a couple points to take into account. Number one, if you are somebody who's a never-Trumper neocon, who's just aching for war, you're not happy. Like, if you're Lindsey Graham, you're John McCain, you're the Weekly Standard, you're not happy with this. You've National Review, you're not happy. The whole idea of this just disgusts you, because the chances of going to World War III with North Korea have gone down tremendously. Because when people talk, they tend to not go to war with each other. They tend to open up a dialogue, which then can result in cooperation and freedom and at least not killing each other. I mean, that's how historically it's worked. So there's a lot of people today who are angry. Like, Lindsey Graham is very, very angry today. And as you know, Lindsey Graham is one of the people that I can't stand the most on my can't stand list. He's just high up there in terms of that. Lindsey Graham just continues to astound me with his nonsense that he always shows. And if you want to talk about a guy who needs some new eyebrows, it would definitely be Lindsey Graham. But he needs a whole sort of man, just manliness overview, like a redesign, complete redesign from head to toe, really, in terms of his manliness. But that's for a whole other show. For right now, we'll just focus on his whining about this. Let's take a listen, shall we, to Lindsey Graham being very, very upset with President Trump. Take a listen.
Let me ask you about these so-called war games. That's what the president talks about, and these joint military exercises between South Korea and the United States. The president's called them provocative. That's certainly the North Koreans' view of them. And he said today, okay, well, we're not going to do them anymore. So that's a major concession by the U.S.
It is.
Did the U.S. give more than it got today?
I don't think canceling a war game is going to matter over the arc of time. The one thing that I would violently disagree with is removing our troops. I can't imagine I would vote for any agreement that requires us to withdraw our forces, because that would destabilize Asia. That's what China wants. That doesn't make the world more peaceful. It makes it more dangerous. The goal is for them to give up their weapons program, missiles, and bombs in return for security and prosperity. Senator Schumer, a Democrat, has laid out a deal I could accept. The only way you're going to get that deal is to convince North Korea that if they do not take the peace route, we will use military force as a last option. We're going to end this program one way or the other. It's not if, it's how, and it's when. And I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm very pleased with President Trump thus far, but we've got a long ways to go. They've done this twice, and we can't let them do it a third time.
All right, now let's understand a couple points here. How great would it be to bring the troops home from Korea? I mean, that would be great, right? That would be a sign of progress, but not to a guy like Lindsey Graham. He wants troops everywhere he can possibly put them, all over the world. And just, this is 24 hours old, not even 24 hours old, and he's already slamming parts of this. And Chuck Schumer has got a plan he can go along with. Well, then change parties and just come out of the closet and be who you are. I mean that in political closet. I don't mean it. I'm just saying, just come out of the political closet and be a Democrat. We all know deep down inside that's where you lie on so many of these issues. Just don't hide it anymore. This is the president on security assurances and bringing troops home. Not that there's anything wrong with that, by the way, coming out and being a Democrat. I'm saying there's nothing wrong with that. You should just be you and be who you are. It's 2018, man. You're not fooling anybody anymore. We know where you stand on these issues. But this is the president on security assurances and bringing the troops home. Cut nine.
On the security assurances you talked about in your statement, can you be specific about what assurances you are willing to give to Kim Jong-un? Does that include reducing military capabilities? And just to follow up on your answer.
No, we're not reducing anything. We're not reducing. At some point, I have to be honest, and I used to say this during my campaign, as you know probably better than most. I want to get our soldiers out. I want to bring our soldiers back home.
Good.
We have right now 32,000 soldiers in South Korea. And I'd like to be able to bring them back home, but that's not part of the equation right now. At some point, I hope it will be, but not right now. We will be stopping the war games, which will save us a tremendous amount of money, unless and until we see that the future negotiation is not going along like it should. But we'll be saving a tremendous amount of money. Plus, I think it's very provocative.
Yeah, well, he's 100% right on that point. On both of those points, by the way. And there's not even a war game scheduled till 2019, just for the record, which you'll find out a little bit later in the show. All right, let's get your reaction to this. 855-839-1210, pound 1210 in a cell. Greg is in Long Beach Island, LBI. Greg, how are you?
Rich, great show. I got to tell you. I wish somebody would tell the story of who Nancy Pelosi is in her family, because I lived in Baltimore for 12 years, so I know a lot about Nancy Pelosi. Schumer, that other idiot, Graham, McCain, Ryan, you can put them all in the same bucket, and they're all garbage. You know, in 2015, November of 2015, I posted a photo of myself in front of Trump Tower. I lost about half my Facebook friends, which doesn't really matter anyway. I completely support Mr. Trump. I think he's doing a great job. And I just wish some of these pundits could give me stock tips, because I would do the opposite of everything they say, and I'd be a wealthy person. These people are morons. This country has to wake up, and hopefully we have more people like you and Hush that get the word out. That's all I really got to say. I watched it. It was great. I watched Dennis Rodman. It brought tears to my eyes. And I think the guy's doing a great job, and it's just unbelievable that these sick people will find anything that this man does and will not only criticize it, but, like, go beyond criticism. And these are the same failed people year after year after year. And I got to tell you, not to compare it, but I was president of a condo years ago in Florida, and it was the same textbook, you know, leftist playbook. Attack, disrupt, and these were the same people that year after year after year put the building in financial straits, physical straits. They're the same losers that get nothing done, and then when somebody comes along and gets something done, we see what they do. Go, Trump, go, is all I got to say.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you. Appreciate that. You got it. He was president of Del Boca Vista Phase 4, by the way, for the record. Ted is in Swarthmore. Ted, how are you?
Good, Rich. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good day. Hey, I just wanted to remind people, there was another president just before Trump who sent an airplane full of money along with his negotiations to, like, I think it was somebody like Iran, wasn't it?
I believe it was, yes.
I believe that was that, and the same Nancy Pelosi and Chucky Schumer were touting that as a great monumental success.
I believe you are correct, sir.
And just one other thing, I missed you last week when you were doing the Johnsons. Maybe Donald Trump should get Lane Johnson a pardon. What do you think?
Listen, thank you for referencing a bit we did on Wednesday or Thursday. We always appreciate that, Ted.
Well, I didn't have Friday to call you, that's why.
I know, it was as if the show committed suicide that day. Ted, thank you for the call.
You
appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
All you do is great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Too soon?
Jeez.
Too soon? What? Sometimes I wish the stuff that we say off the air could be on the air, but there's a reason we say it off the air. The comments we said yesterday, the post show.
Yeah, the post show meeting yesterday should have been Facebook leftovers.
I know. We'd all be out of a job today or having to write handwritten apology notes to anybody, but there were some very good lines that were said. It's just we live in very, very fragile times, yes. And we cross the line
daily.
Yeah, more than anybody else does. And so, you know that when I think we went too far, we've gone like to the point of Entercom corporate communications saying this is now going to become a jazz station too far. So we got to be careful of that. All right. We got a lot to get to. Mostly want to get to your calls, your thoughts on all this. 855-839-1210, pound 1210 in a cell. I have to tell you that I was very impressed with the Trump-Kim summit, but not nearly as impressed as I was with the lesser Cuomo and Dennis Rodman. That summit was historic last night.
Oh, yeah.
And we will cover that in extensive detail, Dawn. I promise you that today.
We're back with the Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
So history was made last night. The president of the United States sitting down with the leader of North Korea. And I will tell you that the bottom line is that we have, for the first time ever, move the world towards peace, ever being with North Korea under this leadership of Kim Jong-un. This is the first time it's happened. This is unprecedented. And I'm telling you right now, and you know this is true, that if this were any other president, everybody would be saying that. A chorus of people would be saying that right now. They would all be saying the same thing. They would be saying that this is peace in our time. This is historic. What did we agree to? We agreed to stop the military exercises, and the reaction from the American media was, oh, South Korea was caught off guard. Oh, okay. South Korea was caught off guard for military exercises that weren't going to take place for a year. All right. We gave North Korea legitimacy by meeting with him. So that's the argument now. We gave him legitimacy by meeting with him. All right. Brutal dictator and a regime. Brutal regime, in fact. Shepard Smith was just showing all the brutality of the Kim Jong-un regime. This is the thing you're hearing today, which is these guys, these brutal dictators are all, they're brutal and their regimes are brutal and their prisons and their human rights abuses. Now, mind you, though, you never hear that stuff about Cuba, number one. Number two, how do you ever move countries like that away from running the show like that if you don't meet with them? That's my question. I've always wondered that. How do you move people into the light if they're allowed to operate under the cover of darkness and you have no interest in ever going over there and meeting with them and trying to open things up? How does it happen? How does change occur? You know as well as I do it doesn't. It can't possibly occur. But that's where we are right now. We are now saying that by meeting with him, we have propped up this brutal regime dictator. I'll share with you a couple of clips here. First of all, this is with Brian Williams' show now. This is a Nicole Wallace, who used to be a Republican. I guess she's in the Never Trump Republican camp, but I thought this is interesting now. Because of this, what Trump and Kim Jong-un have both established here. Take a listen out of this. Cut four.
Something that two people have pointed out to me in the last couple of days is that Donald Trump isn't an in-person negotiator. He's an in-person bloviator. There will not be a great exchange at this lunch. He talks, and people that have interviewed him, if you listen or watch those interviews, people don't get a lot of questions in with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
A comment is made, a position is put on the table, either by the North Koreans or by Pompeo, and then Trump can go for 25 minutes. It's not inconceivable that they don't make much more progress. Something else that our own Keir Simmons reported today and shared with us at 4 p.m. is that both men are liars. He said Kim Jong-un lies, and he said Donald Trump lies. So it is at this point, and I've talked to two former senior intelligence officials, it is a known unknown what was discussed, and it is not knowable that we'll ever know.
What happened
in that meeting, because both men are known and established liars.
That's hard.
Well, somewhere Rumsfeld just had a chill.
Yeah. It's very cute and charming that Brian Williams and Rachel Maddow and Nicole Wallace are both saying that the two men are liars. Right? This is what I mean. This is the reaction of the left. How would it be if Barack Obama sat down with Kim Jong-un? Just ask yourself that question. Well, here was MSNBC and many others in the media just melting down when Obama met with Cuba and Cuban dictator Raul Castro, who, by the way, I just want to add for the record, because this is often lost to the college reinterpretation of communism. This is what happens when you go to college. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but I'm just maybe reminding you, or those of you who have not gone to college yet, or those of you that are thinking about going, or those of you that were smart and didn't go at all. Here's what happens. You get to college and you're introduced to a bunch of professors who say, the problem with communism is that it's just never been applied correctly. And they tell you all the beautiful things that communism can achieve. And they share with you a book called Karl Marx's Theories, The Communist Manifesto, which is now coming out as a graphic novel. I kid you not. And they tell you the only reason why communism has not worked is because it's just never been applied properly. And they give you the complimentary Che Guevara t-shirt and a hacky sack. And they tell you someday there'll be a leader who will come along and implement communism the way that Karl Marx envisioned. What they don't tell you is that the brutality that exists under communism is because the system can't take care of everybody, can't support everybody there. They won't tell you that. And they won't share with you the brutality under, say, the Castro brothers, because they want you to believe the problem is us, not them. So they hide a lot of this stuff. But the truth is, Cuba was a brutal regime. Cuba still is a brutal regime. Cuba imprisoned people for their politics. Cuba discharged on rafts people who were mentally ill. And by mentally ill, I mean they were classified that by the state for disagreeing with communism. Cuba killed political enemies, and on it goes. And you know this as well as I do. And anyway, when Obama went to Cuba, I don't know if Shepard Smith and the other phonies spent time lamenting all of the human rights abuses. I don't know. I do know that there were a whole lot of cheers that were going on. Take a listen.
Well, good day from New York. A momentous day, especially for those Americans old enough to remember the Cold War. The curtain came down between Cuba and the United States in January of 1961. And in just a moment, diplomatic relations, at least the first steps to which, will be reestablished.
Stop. This is the same Brian Williams who was in the cut we just played 8 seconds ago, where with Nicole Wallace and Rachel Maddow mocking Trump and Kim Jong-un as liars. Same Brian Williams. Yes. Different platform. Back then, Brian Williams was the host of the NBC Nightly News, making $23 million a year, I'm guessing. What would you say? 23?
Yeah.
Maybe more? Now he's the host of The 11th Hour, which doesn't even have his name in it, by the way, and doesn't air at The 11th Hour. And I'm guessing Brian Williams on a good day makes a cool, 75, 80 G's, and that includes when he works on the weekends in the MSNBC cafe. Little catering side job. So it's a different Brian Williams, but it's the same Brian Williams who's now giving a historic hoorah to Barack Obama for opening up the Cold War and blah, blah, blah. So just thought I'd share with you that point. Keep going.
It is a day of momentous change, fast-moving change, and in a moment we're going to hear from the president, Chris Jansing, on the White House lawn. Chris, quite a day.
Unbelievable. 50 years of change. The first phone call, as you mentioned, between the leaders of these two countries since the revolution.
There's no doubt about it. This is a rapid period of change. And Andrea, sum up what we have just seen take place in the last half hour.
It's extraordinary.
I was 2 years old when the curtain went up between our two countries. This spans the scope of our adult lives as Americans.
Absolutely, and it's hard to avoid the symbolism of it. This is one of the last vestiges of the Cold War. And the taking down, if you will, of the symbolic walls or substantive walls right. between the United States and Cuba marks yet again the end of that
marks,
era of history.
Get
this
it?
Momentous
M-A-R-X.
Day between these two nations, something tumbled down that has been in place for half a century.
Isn't this Barack Obama's
tear down this wall, Mr. Castro? That kind of
by
a
the
moment?
Way, stop, I mean, stop, stop. I believe that that's that fat Ed Schultz.
It is.
Who
when you used to have a show.
Had a job on MSNBC, if I'm not mistaken, and is now nowhere to be found. I believe he was also at one point a host on the now... Yes, Greg.
He actually does have a job now. He's with Larry King on Russian TV.
Is he really?
Yes. Just wanted to put in that factual...
John in Stalingrad. I remember when it was St. Petersburg. Your thoughts on all this? All right, we got a lot more to get. This montage will be replayed throughout the entire show. I want to hear your thoughts on this, how you feel about the president's historic summit last night. And do you agree with my point that the media would be hailing this if it were Barack Obama versus criticizing the hell out of it? 855-839-1210, pound 1210 in a cell.
We're back with the Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, let's get your reaction. Clifford in Cherry Hill. Cliff, how you doing?
Hey, great. I love your show, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
Quick comment. I'm one of those white privileged guys that have five jobs, but that's another thing. Anyway, my comment is, wouldn't it be ironic if the very uranium that Hillary sold to the Russians as Secretary of State is the same uranium that Donald Trump's getting removed from North Korea?
Well, I tell
you, not impossible.
Certainly, stranger things have happened, right?
Right.
Well, you got five. You said five jobs. You said, what do you do? Give me all five.
Okay, I'm a tech. I fix copy machines. Mm-hmm. I leave there and I run an open mic. I play Neil Young at a show. Then I deliver pizza because that's what real musicians do. I mow lawns on a weekend, and I give guitar lessons on Sundays.
No kidding. Now, that's so I'm with you. I love Neil Young. Obviously, you and I share similar political beliefs, and Neil Young and I and you, we does not. I mean, I don't think Neil Young.
Yeah, I know, but I like your music.
Well, I'm with you. I love Neil Young. I love Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, too. So give me a little Neil Young. Let's see how good you are. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. Here I am in the court.
Come on.
Hold on. Give me 1 second. Okay.
Should I play a
backtrack? You want a little backtrack? You regularly a little backtrack.
You got me on a spot here.
That's good. We like to do that.
Oh, man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you. I need someone to love me the whole day through.
All right, it's not bad. You know, on the spot, Clifford, I like it.
Yeah. You got to get a lot of deep breaths for that one.
I know, it's true. All right, buddy. Thank you for the call.
Love your show.
Thanks, man. Drive safe and good luck with all the gigs. Gene is in Mount Holly. Gene, how are you?
Hi. You know, I'm really perplexed at the media. I mean, on the one hand, you know, they got this attitude with Putin, with the summit because of Trump. And then I'm thinking in my head, China's on the world stage. Everyone is dealing and trading with them. But meanwhile, they're stealing organs from political prisoners to sell on the black market. Now that's torture. So, you know, come on, guys. You got to sit down and talk to these people. This is bullshit.
Easy. It's all right, Gene. It's all right.
Gene with a potty mouth.
Fired up today. I get it. It's all right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Art is, and I agree with you. The only way you're ever going to move away from dictatorship is to meet with people. It's the only way. Art is in South Philly. Hey, Art.
So, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
What happens when the Nobel Prize Committee has to sit down and ponder giving Donald Trump a Nobel Peace Prize for denuclearizing North Korea? How does that meeting go? How do I get to be a fly on that wall?
Yeah.
They gave him a Nobel Peace Prize for breathing.
It's well said. Look, Art, I've said it before, and thanks for the call. I think the president does deserve the Nobel Peace Prize if this comes to fruition, without question. There's no doubt about it. All right, 855-839-1210, pound 1210 in a cell. John Meacham, presidential historian, was on, I believe it was Morning Joe this morning on MSNBC. This is interesting now, his take on this. China. By the way, if your kids ever want to understand the concept of logic, all right, this is an example of what's not logic. Like, you know, they say two things don't follow the other, that sort yes. of thing. All right. Cut 14.
Just because something hasn't happened before doesn't mean it's historic. That's one thing. I think when you call something historic, it means that it has a good chance of having lasting implications. And I think it's very unclear, at least to my layman's eye, that this does that.
Okay, now, actually, if something has never happened before...
It's historic.
And it happens, and then you look back on it, what do you call that?
Historic.
Right. And if something has never happened before... And they said it couldn't happen, and it happens, and then you look back on that thing that happened, you would call that a blank moment.
Historic.
Right. And if you were going to talk about that moment, if nothing happened ever past that moment, like nothing else ever occurred, you'd go back to that moment and say, the blank moment yielded nothing productive. The what moment?
Historic.
Right. If it does yield to the denuclearization of the peninsula, you would go, the blank moment yielded the denuclearization.
The historic.
And if it leads to an entire meteor coming down and crashing on all of us and ending it all once and for all, you would still call it?
Historic.
Right. Under which circumstances would you not call it historic?
If you were crazy.
And John Meacham on Morning Joe.
Senile.
Like, literally, no matter what happens is the outcome, it's still historic when the president sits down with Kim Jong-un.
Yes.
In school, when you learn about past events, what class is that?
History.
Oh, I'm just
it's
curious.
Like, it's
are
just,
you sure?
It blows my mind. Like, I made sure that I watched this with my kids last night. I said, this is history in the making, and we're waiting, and they had the shot, and they said, this is live. You know, because I think, wow, this is like Gorbachev, you know, bring this wall down. You know what I mean? This right. is a moment that you should be watching with your kids and your family saying, this is amazing. And if it turns out that it doesn't go the way we want it to go, it still was historic, an attempt to do something right, right?
Right. Otherwise, what happens? If nothing happens, they delete it from the history books? They just pretend like it never happened?
I think they do try to do that, actually.
They probably do. Actually, you know what? Now that you say it, yeah, that's like exactly what they would do. But in a normal world, in history class, they would just say they tried, didn't yield anything, but hey, they gave it a good shot, right?
Yes.
Right? By the way, Clifford, if you're still listening, please call back on the show. Please call back and give your information to Matt. We have, I'm not even joking, a couple listeners would like to come see you play and do your Neil Young.
Oh,
yeah. So please call back at 855-839-1210. Give your information to Matt and how we can follow you on either Twitter or Facebook. I meant to ask you that, but your call was historic and I just lost track of it in my mind there. So in other words, if the president of the United States meets with the leader of North Korea, they've never done it before, you call that a blank moment.
Historic.
Except if you're John Meacham, because just because it's never happened before doesn't mean it's historic. What do you call a car from the 1950s that goes in one of those parades?
Classic.
I call it a historic. I believe that's what's on the license plate.
Just because something hasn't happened before doesn't mean it's historic.
Right, right, exactly. You know, right, it's very important point you make there. All right, we got a lot to do, a lot to say, and former President George H.W. Bush, 94 years old today. There you go, 94 years old. Happy birthday to him.
Racioli 3 to 6, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.